is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here, and oh, what a week, since we spoke last, friends. Well, listen, the aftermath of this school massacre is front on everybody's mind. It is the Vernon story. Where do we go next? What do we do here to fix this thing, yeah? Also, investigations by Washington Standards. We have a panel discussion we'll have a little bit later on about all of these Washington investigations. And furthermore, we have a town hall discussion. Our goal today is to show CNN how it is really done. And with violence in our schools, we will have a stellar panel later on in the show. Lieutenant Randy Sutton will be here, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, Dennis Santiago, Ava Armstrong. So a lot there in that town hall. Stay tuned for that. At the top of the show here, let's start off here. I would like you to meet Dave Smith. He's the most recognized police trainer and author in the industry today. He uses the science of, human performance combined with humor to train officers to win through his alter ego, J.D. Buck Savage. Some people know him as Buck Savage, other people Dave Smith. Also, Sergeant Betsy Smith is here. Now, you may recognize that name on the platform here. She's a co-host on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. And you will hear her weekdays at 5 p.m. on the channel there. Betsy's a police officer for 29 years. She's a law enforcement trainer for over 20 of those years. And she's a consultant trainer to the industry. And by happenstance, friends, Betsy and Dave happen to be a couple and are married for many years. So very unusual, and they are one of those power couples. So congratulations first, Betsy and Dave, that you're one of the few couples that can work together and play together. That's good. I like that. I'm envious. All right, let's start here. I want to draw out this scenario for people. So just hear me out here now. The year now is 2022. It's a new utopia in America. It's a new liberal agenda. The left won in 2020. They took over Congress, both the House and the Senate. All guns have now been banned. They are banned, illegal. In fact, they actually went door to door to collect these guns in searches. Now, what happens next is the question. Well, the latest news reports on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, Washington Post, New York Times, and every other outlet in the country, basically, is this. And here's the headlines. The latest of too many school shootings since the ban of guns has spiked the interest of Congress and President Joe Biden and Vice President Warren. And once again, this violence rocks the nation. The question is, for how many days? Question is, will this renewed urgency for action fade away, or will Congress and the president finally act? Well, I got to tell you, it's a horrific scene in 2022, Betsy and Dave, and I'm wondering what happens then. So, Dave, take that away from me. Let's start with you here in 2022. You heard the utopia we're in. This really happened now. We're now at that point. What happens next?
Okay, well, we've seen a further restriction on civil liberties because there's no counterbalance to anything the federal government does. This is the republic that Plato so wanted, and yet at the same time, I think even he understood could never possibly work. People who are coming up with ideas without any real material world, no empirical proofs. So we keep bouncing from one failed idea to the other. Meanwhile, human evil still flourishes, and the very problem is the people who we've entrusted to protect us, we have so disempowered, we have so tenderized and created. They're busy worrying about procedural justice and not protecting the community. And chaos is reigning.
Yep, chaos is reigning. That's exactly it, yeah. So, Sergeant Betsy, let's talk a little bit about this utopia in 2022. I mean, it's a sad state. And the point is that I really question often, Betsy, like, what do they really want? What is the ultimate goal here? I really try to understand that, honestly. And you know me, Betsy, I put myself in the other shoes all the time. I may not like the shoes, but I do wear them here and there. And I'm wondering, how do they think that's going to fix anything, Betsy?
Well, first of all, in 2022, with that scenario, Malcolm, I am talking to you from my bunker in northern Wyoming. So my Wi-Fi is a little sketchy here.
Okay.
You know, what are we looking at in that kind of scenario? We're looking at so much less safety, and yet we like to talk about it. And why is that? This is being entirely now media driven. Mm-hmm. And we have been inundated now in the last few weeks with all this talk about gun control and boycott the NRA. And we're not talking about the real issues. We're not talking about what really happened, for example, in the Parkland shooting. We're not talking about the epic failures of what? Government on the state, local, and federal level failed this shooter, failed his victims, failed that school system. And yet, what's a utopian society? More government. Doesn't make sense, Malcolm. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. More government seems to be what they think is the solution, which I don't comprehend as well. But let's get serious here. So in the last couple of days, one of the most outspoken military folks on these type of matters, you probably heard his name before, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. He wrote an op-ed that is getting worldwide attention to ban the AR-15 assault rifle. Now, this is a military man. Most people think he's pretty conservative-minded, so on and so forth. What are these weapons used for specifically is the question he's asking. I mean, you don't hunt with them, so what exactly are you doing with them? Let's remind folks that the AR-15 fires 45 rounds a minute. So, Dave, how would you respond to Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters? Is that, I mean, for real, is this a real consideration that should be looked at?
Well, first off, Ralph Peters is not a conservative, whatever we may think of him. Ralph Peters is a military historian, an analyst, an intelligence expert, specializing in the Soviet Army. And his Civil War books are outstanding. But as far as social commentary, I always find his perspective oddly authoritarian and not particularly insightful. That said, the AR-15 is a sporting weapon. I own several. My wife owns several, much nicer one than mine, by the way. And she not only had it as a patrol carbine, but you know, it's something that you can hunt with. It's a platform that people are creating all kinds of great bullets for everything from hunting to target practice. It's a very accurate, light firearm. It is the same platform that the fully automatic weapons the military carries. But it's very little difference in terms of performance than my Ruger Mini 14 or any one of the Steyrs or any one of a vast number of semi-automatic rifles that are out there. So if there's this liberal fantasy, this is the current shiny object to keep us away from dealing with real social issues. And like your scenario that started this program, we are going to chase shiny objects without ever solving real social problems because they don't want to deal with social problems because that might conflict with their fantasies. They want to feminize or demasculinate, whatever you want to say, law enforcement. Well, you got cops that won't go in a shooting now. Congratulations. However, they're very sensitive, and they can certainly explain bias to you. They're full of all kinds of angst from the training that's mandated today. So this is a real problem.
Hey, listen, I want to talk about what you just said, in fact. It's now being reported that several Broward County officers, I think that's what you referenced a moment ago here, were outside, in addition to this security officer who was armed, and did not enter while the gunman was blowing the kids and massacring these kids away. And of course, they got the security officer on camera. Now, all of this is being investigated as we speak here, but that's a shock. Dave, what do you think about that? I mean, is do you think there's some truth to it, number one? I mean, still, really, we don't have this confirmed yet, do we?
No, and I'm really shy of any kind of news report till I get it through through my sources, you know. Yeah. Randy Sutton will tell us first, so to speak. You know?
There you go. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, we really don't know. Betsy, you've been hearing some of the reports on that, right, about these officers? Yeah. What do you think?
Okay. First of all, the Deputy Scott Peterson, who is being excoriated for not going in, he's not a security guard. He is a Broward County deputy. He's been a what we call a school resource officer. I used to run that program in my own agency. He's been a school resource officer since 1991. People need to understand what that means. He was not a security guard. He was not there to keep children safe. He is there as an officer counselor. It's only been in the last few years that school resource officers have been even allowed to carry open firearms. They usually had them in some sort of fanny pack. In some schools, Dave and I have spoken to officers who were required to keep their pistols in their offices locked up because we didn't want children to see guns. So there's a misunderstanding that this guy was there to be a security guard. He wasn't. He was an officer counselor. Now, it was bad what he did. Now, Broward County, four more deputies respond, and what do? They take up a position, what we would call a perimeter position, with their firearms drawn, and they wait. That's what we used to do in pre-Columbine. What you have here is a training issue, and you ultimately have a leadership issue, and I think that's going to come out here in the next week or two. We're going to see. There's going to be a lot more that comes out, and I think ultimately, who's at fault here besides the system is Sheriff Israel.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, and I think there's going to be more to say about that just ahead from what I can see today, Betsy, for sure. Listen, President Trump has met with the students and parents this week. I mean, there's a lot of suggestions about these bump stocks, and you can both tell me what you think about that in a moment. And he's also, there's a lot of talk, and he seems to be getting behind the talk about upping the gun purchase age for long guns to 21 from 18. Betsy, what do you think about that? I mean, do you think there's, first of all, do you endorse that 21 would be the age versus 18, and do you think this can happen?
Oh, I think it can happen, and I think that is something that our GOP might do to keep people happy. Consider this. At 18, we can send a kid to Iraq or Afghanistan or Germany or South Korea or wherever to take up long guns and fight for the freedoms of this nation. So do we want to keep them from purchasing long guns? I think it's ridiculous. Again, this has nothing to do with the gun. It's what Dave said is true. It's the shiny object. This kid, our Parkland shooter, had a long history of mental illness. The feds should have never let him pass a background check. And then there were many opportunities for the Broward County Sheriff, for Child Protective Services in Florida, and for his mother. You know, she only died 4 months ago. Exactly. And for his foster parents to take those firearms away. Nobody did it.
Right.
And it's because we have we're trying to divert this kid to lower crime rates so that the Broward County Sheriff's Department can get more federal money. And that's what people need to look at. And I think that's what's going
to
come out.
All right. I want to talk to you both as police officers about these background checks a moment. Okay. All right. Because this has been a political argument that I've heard for many, many, many years now. And it goes back and forth between both the political left and the political right, which I speak about all the time as being both in incessant retarded and not able to make intelligent decisions, by the way. But looking at these background checks, listen, what's wrong? Dave, answer me back. What is wrong, if anything? You tell me, with having serious what I'm talking about, really tightening up our background checks across the board, that if you've got any screws loose whatsoever, like Betsy was just saying, well, a kid like this, I mean, before you worry about what gun he has or if he should have a gun or how old the age is or whatever it is, because you could be 21 and 2 months old and get it legally versus being 20 and not being able to get it legally. Or you could use an F-150, or you could use a bomb on your chest, or you could use a couple of knives, or you could use, I mean, it goes on and on and on. You could use moronic acid. And walk in a room and do something. You could use a lot of things. So the point is, background checks. Talk to me on background checks, Dave. I mean, are you good with where they are now? Do we advance the agenda forward? Do we get more aggressive with background checks? So if you are not entitled to have a gun, you don't get one.
Right. And, you know, this is, you're hitting it right on the head. Number one, if they seized every gun in the United States today, the criminal mind, the insane shooter, whatever you want. I know it's not right to condemn mental illness as anything other than just a minor issue. I see that quite a bit on Facebook. Others know, but that person who is an emotionally disturbed individual is going to find a weapon. The background check is a very convenient tool. The majority of states do a very good job. Mm-hmm. Before you can buy any firearm, you have to pass a background check. Now, it's only as good as the input. Like any other human system,
right.
It's got the fallible component is the human being. When the military fails to put in dishonorably discharged people, they're going to be allowed to purchase that firearm if they haven't committed any other crimes to flag them. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, what you hear the Democrats pushing for, the liberals, is that they want every transaction. If I wanted to sell you one of my firearms, I would have to have you get a background check, which really means essentially registering guns throughout the United States. And those of us with a more libertarian bent are against that. Mm-hmm. And again, this is becoming an issue. There's some states don't do a good job. So let's come up. I'm all for having a consistent and thorough background check for those who are purchasing firearms in the marketplace.
Amen. Yeah.
What have we done with the shooting already? Right. We're not memorializing these kids or these heroic teachers and these heroic children that saved other children before they were gunned down. Right. We're politicizing the entire situation.
Well, the country does that every time, Betsy. You're 100% right. You're totally spot on. And it's one of the things, as you know me enough to know, that annoys me the most about our country is that our politicians and the media alike, they politicize absolutely everything instead of fixing the problem. I mean, our goal here is to fix this problem. Let's talk about the security at schools a moment, please. There's also talk about a national ID card system, a database to provide some sort of a system. I'm speaking about specifically of mental health. You know, Dave, there's a lot of times there's like so many strikes you're out. As Betsy was just saying a moment ago, this kid, and I don't use his name on here, I don't use murderers' names or pitches on my platform ever. That's another thing I wish the media would do, is not glorify these people. You'll not see any of the killers' pictures on America Out Loud, nor do I say their names. I just don't honor any of these people this way. I think there's too much glorification. I think there's too many. And what about the crime in video games and the culture we've created in the movies, in the entertainment system out of Hollywood, that makes killing perfectly legitimate in people's minds? And then they go get the gun and then they do whatever they're going to do. I think there's a lot of things here, Betsy, as you say, we need to step back and fix in a decent society that we need to understand to get right before we get all this stuff in front of each other's face and a politicizing of guns and what have you over Second Amendment rights. Dave, when it comes to hardening our schools specifically, okay, and I'm thinking it's time to harden the schools. And Betsy, back to your point about money, I don't really care where the money comes from. You can take it from our politician's salary. I don't really care where it comes from, but we've got to harden our schools. We've got to get a choke point, because this criminal evidently came in an unlocked door through the back or whatever he did. The point is, do you agree with that, Dave? As far as a choke point of some sort, the schools, that they've got to be hardened. Because, again, this kid could have drove an F-150 right as they're walking out the door. He could have plowed 20 people over and murdered them immediately.
He could have killed a lot more kids, just driving a pickup truck on the sidewalk after school. The
Absolutely.
Problem is, you've just hit 18 issues. We need a whole show just to talk about the various factors you talk about. Mm-hmm. Mental illness is not dealt with in our country, and it hasn't been for 35 years. Once the court intervened, and once we're going to help everyone. Well, some people... helping them is warehousing them, whether you like it or not. Unfortunately, some people need to be warehoused. They've handcuffed us and to be able to do what we... When I first started back in the old days, in the 70s, we could take somebody in for a three-day evaluation based on our evaluation alone. And now you just can't do these things. And you see here in a case, the kid showed all these problems. He had predisposition for these violent games. And here's the problem. You and I may play hundreds of hours of one of these incredibly violent games, which I obviously, I raised, four kids that did like video games. The problem is what if you have a predisposition that is triggered by this?
Exactly.
And people say, well, you played war when you were a kid. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, me with a wooden stick, Vic Morrow, mm-hmm. From combat, was a lot different psychically than me getting on that computer and playing a totally immersing game. And I can tell you just from personal experience, the intensity of it. So you're hitting all these issues that are so valid.
Well, Dave, I want to tell you this. Listen, not to date myself at all, brother, but I played with G.I. Joes in the dirt out there. We didn't have phones or computers at the time, but the G.I. Joes, and we'd have the little military guys running around, and so, you know, that's kind of the era I come from. Anyways, we will have both Betsy and Dave on our nightly news program to talk further about all of this. Big, big thank you to Sergeant Betsy Smith and Dave Smith, a.k.a. Buck Savage, of course, on this conversation. Listen, friends, we have a lot of show just ahead here. We've got a big panel discussion coming up next with Ilana Friedman and George McClellan on these investigations coming out of Washington. I mean, is this congressional preoccupation these days or a necessity of some sort, or are they just making themselves all useful in Washington, I wonder? We'll take that up next. And again, our town hall discussion comes at the latter part of the show. We'll look at the school security a little more in depth. We have a school security expert, and Lieutenant Randy Sutton joins us as well. We'll be right back in just a moment with more Viewpoint.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, friends, to Viewpoint this Sunday. And I have to tell you, I've tried to distinguish between what Congress really does up there versus all of these investigations. It's hard to distinguish between all of the BS and the work that's really being done. You know, something back in 1972, Ronald Reagan said, government does not solve problems, it subsidizes them. Boy, if that doesn't speak to me real well today. So one of the big questions I want to ask our panel here coming up next is, has Congress traded their primary responsibility of legislation, you know, it's just what we hired these cats for, right, to that of investigative reporting? You know, has any one of these recent investigations, and there are so many of them, yielded any results, or is it just, again, 6 o'clock news headlines that fade away in mere days? You know, you have to question and think with all of this going on. So one of the people, the ordinary mom and dad at home, certainly can't follow all this. Welcome to the show here, please. George McClellan is here. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Services. George is a political commentator, certainly a very avid writer, columnist on America Out Loud. We're thrilled to have him here. And also thrilled to have Ilana Friedman. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Well, Ilana trained in Israel, and she focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. It's terrific to have both of you here. Is there any doubt, George, that that memo that Schiff put out there, I mean, I think we all kind of knew right before it even happened that this thing was just loaded with problems that were going to have to be redacted, and the president was going to have to get his hand in there. And I guess this was the strategic angle they used to kind of tie this up into the news cycle, huh?
Yeah, of course it was. You remember the old Uncle Remus story about the Brer Rabbit and the Tar Baby?
Oh, it's one of my favorites. One of my favorites, yeah.
That's exactly what that memo was, a Tar Baby. Trump thought, and he says, no, I'm not going to redact anything. So, in other words, he's not sticking his fist in the tar. He sent it back to Brer Fox and said, listen, fix it yourself.
I knew that nursery rhyme would come in handy one day for me, George, and there it is right there. Now the real meaning of the Brer program, huh? Well, I don't think any of us believe anything is going to be changed from it. There's nothing, obviously. There's no shoe to drop in that memo, because if there was, we all would have heard it by now. I'm not thinking there was, again, any shoe to drop there. There was no big aha moment. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it exists. I think you're right.
Yeah, but with the inclusion of classified information, whether or not it was relevant, they created a document where they could then accuse the Trump administration of keeping things from the American people.
Well, that was the... But again, George, if you're going to have a game plan, it's kind of brilliant of them, actually. A little stupid. But brilliant and stupid kind of are two similar houses here, George. But, I mean, it was kind of brilliantly... brilliantly stupid. Is there such a thing, George McClellan?
Well, yeah, there is. But in this instance here, if you're going to use government information as a weapon, you got to do it right away or it loses its power. It's been, what, a week and a half or 2 weeks now? And it's no longer an issue. Who cares what the Schiff memo says? It has no relevance, no meaning anymore. Information, particularly intelligence information, loses its value the minute it's written down on a piece of paper.
I want to talk to you both next about this email that Susan Rice, had put out there, which she had sent to President Obama as he had ended his time in office. And Senator Grassley has been outspoken about this investigation, which they're saying all leads back to Barack Obama. George, talk to me on this Grassley memo. Grassley and Grandma are very involved in this. They've known about this email far longer. What I hear reports, so they knew about this back in June, but it was released months and months later. I mean, 8-9 months later, we finally found out about this crazy email that was sent. I guess a lot of people have wondered, what will become of the ex-president in this case? Can you prosecute an ex-president as such? And what do you get out of this Susan Rice strange email that we all know about at this point?
So it's amateurish for her to try to say or show that they were all aware that they had to follow the law when they hadn't been doing it for 8 years.
Right, they had it right. They had it right. That's a good point. Yeah. By the way, George, she sent that to herself on January 20th, by the way. That's the date, actually, you know. So you're exactly correct to say it was after the fact. Yeah. And it was Obama.
Quite amateurish.
Yeah.
Quite amateurish. I mean, anybody in the intelligence would not do such a thing. You couldn't do it and get away with it with these automatic timestamps on emails.
Correct. That's the key. Now, what happened here is they stressed that the Russia investigation was conducted by the book, Ilana. That this is what Rice wrote in that reference point, and that Obama wanted to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, which of course they didn't really engage, they sabotaged them, as we find out now, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. This all kind of smells, Ilana Friedman.
Well, I'm not sure the president ever did anything by the book, President Obama. And it doesn't surprise me that Susan Rice rushed into the breach after Trump won the election long afterwards. And that she tried to do this, as George says, is very amateurish. And I was really surprised to hear that somebody with her supposed credentials would do something so stupid, except it's very possible that she was asked by Obama to do it.
That's what I gather. That's what I gather, Ilana. Yeah. She wouldn't just do that on her own. There's no reason to, you know? She was obviously asked by the ex-president, I would think. I don't even think that's debatable at this point. But, you know, the real underlying point to the Susan Rice thing is, who would even believe her at this point? Who would believe anything she would put in an email, George, Ilana? I mean, come on. I mean, this lady has consistently, throughout her point in office, has lied to the American people, no?
Yes, exactly. After her debacle Sunday going on the talk shows, regarding the Benghazi thing, she has no credibility. Who would believe it?
I don't think so. All right.
I am of the opinion that she was simply a pawn of the Obama administration. She's supposed to be a very bright woman, but I think she was under somebody's heel because it seemed to be very out of character for her to be doing this after Benghazi. This was ridiculous. I was doing a lot of work on the Benghazi thing immediately afterwards, and 2 days after this thing, I had an article out in public that described exactly what happened with an Al-Qaeda attack and an organized attack, and no film, no video relationship.
Right.
And I had that out on September 14th, actually the evening of September 13th. So how I knew it and she didn't is patently absurd.
Right,
so
exactly.
It has to be that she did it knowingly, and she did it, I believe, under pressure.
Yeah. You know, you got my ears a moment when you just said that about Susan Rice. And, you know, I think I would agree with you and say this, Ilana. I think there are a lot of people, not just Susan Rice, but others in the administration who went along to get along, who maybe had better credentials and, you know, but they were being, I don't know what you want to say here, coerced, or they were being manhandled, I guess, whatever. But, and I think that's what happened in the case of this email after the fact. Clearly, a lot of people were being sucked into this vacuum here, you see? Yeah. And that's what I think we're going to uncover. It's going to be very interesting to see where this goes. Listen, I want to talk to you both about one of the men that I think has taken such a hit. And it pains me to have this conversation because I think Lieutenant General Michael Flynn is an American hero and a national treasure. And I truly believe that with every fiber of my being. And for us to see what has happened to this man by these political pawns is sinful. This past week, Judge Emmett Sullivan issued an order in the United States versus Flynn that, while widely unnoticed, that revealed something a little interesting. It was a motion by Michael Flynn to withdraw his guilty plea based on government misconduct. It is likely in the works. I mean, this is what they're saying is going to happen. I want to ask you, George, I mean, I gave you my feelings on Flynn. I mean, there's no secret about that. Is the special counsel investigation, if it has nothing else, do you think Flynn will be cleared? And what do you think about this whole thing with Flynn?
Well, I recommended in a couple of my articles, you might recall, that he should do exactly what he did on official misconduct. If that happens, mm-hmm. if he is recused or his plea is vacated,
right.
Guess what that does to everything else that that Mueller has done?
Puts it in question.
Everything else he's done is yeah. now questionable.
Right.
I mean, even Manafort should probably try it. And that fellow, I don't know why that fellow pled guilty
Gates.
To conspiracy. Who else is involved in that?
Yeah.
But we're getting off the subject. It takes two for conspiracy.
Right.
Yes. Keep chatting. It's got to be lawful. It's
mm-hmm.
got to be lawful.
Yeah, Gates has claimed guilty here, Ilana, in the last couple of days here, and which, of course, was Manafort's cohort there. That seems like they're going full throttle after Manafort. Again, nothing specifically about Russia collusion with the president, but again, that's what these special counsels do, Ilana. They go on a witch hunt, and God knows what they come back with, you know?
Well, apparently Manafort and Gates were both involved deeply in... for years with the Ukrainians,
right.
And trying to doing whatever they were doing, but it was known, it was general knowledge that they were involved. And once Trump found out before he was president, Manafort was released from the team in I think it was August
right.
2016. So
you think he found out about that? He knew. Do you believe that Trump knew that Manafort was going to be a hot potato, and that's why they pushed him out?
I'm sure it's why he was forced off the team, because Manafort represents, as far as I can understand, he represents what's wrong with the swamp.
Right.
He's one of the big players in Washington,
sure.
and now he's gotten caught, and it's not clear that he isn't going to jail, and whether or not he fights it. He's got a lot on his plate that he has to answer for.
He does. I predict, yeah. Ilana, I think, and George, I want to know what you think about this, but I think Paul Manafort will end up in a prison. What do you think?
Well, sure. He was money laundering and has nothing to do with Trump.
Exactly.
He has his own problems. He'll end up in prison, and apparently Gates will, too.
Yeah, he just happened to get into a bad place. Obviously, these are not clean cats. There's no doubt in my mind. Trump,
yeah,
obviously.
I don't think he happened to get into a bad place. I think he did it. He did it with,
exactly.
Knowledge and foresight.
To put it out there with you, you know, the difference between Manafort and Gates is they're not locked into the beltway of being a Washington politician. But I have to tell you, Ilana, they're all doing the same stuff. You know,
it's
just a matter. It really is. It's sickening. But they don't go after their own type. They go after the others that they can use as what they call an example. Anyways, the whole thing, which brings me to a bigger question. So when you look at all of this, all of these investigations, I started off asking you in about what Congress's role was in all this. You know, Ilana, George, you take a look at all of these investigations. You come right down the line here. You've got the IRS targeting of conservatives. You have the Benghazi investigation. You have the collusion stuff. You have the, you know, the Fast and Furious. I mean, the investigations, Washington style, I've never seen so many, so quick, so fast. The email servers, the WikiLeaks things. It goes on and on and on and on. There is an endless list of investigations. What have we learned from all these investigations? What actions are being taken? Have any of them resulted in any prosecutions at all? And what is Congress, what's their primary responsibility in all of this? I mean, really, if you think about it in those terms, I'm just wondering, it seems to me like there's a lot of smoke and mirrors here. George, speak to that a moment, because I think we're being bamboozled here.
We are being bamboozled. Remember Scooter Libby,
mm-hmm.
convicted for something he didn't even do when a guy named Armitage was responsible for revealing Valerie Palm, who was not a secret agent. So, yes, and this poor guy went to prison for it. Who's going to restore his good name? And who doesn't go to prison? Hillary Clinton.
I'm actually a little bit hopeful that some of the work that some of our congressmen are doing and our senators, people like Grassley, for example, they are really starting to dig in and uncover a lot of this corruption. And I'm a big fan of Chuck Grassley because I think he is doing a phenomenal job,
right.
And he's like a dog with a bone. He's not going to let go of this.
So what Ilana says, I respect and appreciate everything she just said, because what she's trying to do is put a glimmer of hope in there to say that, you know, Malcolm, there are some people up there who do, you know, give a rat's ass, who might be doing some work that matters in trying to uncover all this. And I think you would second that, would you not?
I would do it indeed. Grassley, Nunez, Gowdy are three that come to mind right away.
Listen, big thank you to George McClellan and Ilana Friedman here. And I'll leave you with this on this particular segment, folks, is this. You know, it seems like our Justice Department and is many times asleep, or the rule of law maybe doesn't apply inside the government halls. But it really gives you a pause to think about, where is our Justice Department in this country? You think about that. Listen, coming up next, we have an incredible panel, a town hall discussion on violence in our schools. Where are the solutions? Where do we go next? Stay right there.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday again here. Well, listen, this is that town hall I was telling you about earlier. And so we're entitled in this one, Violence in Our Schools. Where are the solutions? And it's a pretty big question. And the conversation is as hot could be. A lot of people sense that this may be the time that we get something done. Whatever that something is, we have to determine as Americans here. But what is that something so we can protect our kids? Clearly, What happened in Parkland is not acceptable. Well, here on the show is our panel discussion here. Lieutenant Randy Sutton is here. He's a 34-year law enforcement veteran, retired from the Las Vegas Police Department. He's host of Blue Lives Radio, right here on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, actually. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro is here. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security. He's a master trainer and the owner of Pangaro Training. And Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality. Ava's an author who writes about, well, law enforcement and our military with a focus on patriotism. And Ava is a mom as well, and so she can speak from many different vantage points here. Welcome, everybody, to the show. And listen, let me read this to you. Back in 1973, while governor of California, Ronald Reagan said this: "With freedom goes responsibility." Sir Winston Churchill once said, "You can have 10,000 regulations and still not have respect for the law." We might start with the Ten Commandments. If we lived by the Golden Rule, there would be no need for other laws. Wow. Those are some profound words from the previous president and at that time, governor of California. I want to start with this. When you take a look at all the conversations we're having right now at this very moment, how did we arrive at this moment in America? How did we arrive right here at this split moment in America? And I'm going to go first here, put you right on the spot. We've never spoke before, but Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, how did we arrive here, sir?
Well, good morning, everyone. And Malcolm, this is an important question because I write a lot of columns and a lot of different articles about this. And for the last several years, I've been writing about what I call the approaching crossroad. And the crossroad, I think, is very broad. Mm-hmm. It's the crossroad of who we think we are as a country, as a people. We see the world changing. And I think all the violence that we see and the things that are going on today is evidence that not only have we reached that crossroad, but we've started down a completely unknown and different path. Societal breakdown, the changes in what everyone is willing to agree on is the right way to go ahead. We see the complete split in our country, that it's not a matter of we all have the same basic beliefs anymore, only we see it a little differently. We now have completely different beliefs, and we can't agree on hardly anything. And from that comes chaos and difficulty that we're seeing every single day. And it's spilling out into all parts of
it. And one other thought to add to that, Joe, is this, is that our kids are watching all this.
Yes, the kids are living it.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, where are the adults in any of this is what I'm asking you. The kids, yeah. What I'm saying is the kids are watching all this. Your teenagers, your kids, the generation that's coming up, they're watching us, and we are not behaving as adults, I have to tell you. So, Dennis Santiago, pick up where Lieutenant Joe Pangaro was just talking about, because you philosophically look at this country all the time and talk about that intersection of where we're at. And so, in your opinion, how do we arrive here at this moment in America?
Oh, we've been meandering towards this moment for quite a while, obviously. And we got here because of a combination of several things. The internet in particular has had a tremendous impact, far more than people realize on their lives.
That's right.
In that it has allowed individual opinions and in particular strange and macabre individual opinions to come to the forefront because of the way that medium works. And you're seeing a breakdown in what I call Internet America, mm-hmm. which is very, very different from what I call real America. And the two are not presently aligned, and it is causing a tremendous amount of social confusion out there. Mm-hmm. It has, at this point, caused a number of breakdowns in our infrastructure and caused us to not keep track of things that we should keep track of, mm-hmm. do things that that just don't make sense, and it creates cracks and fissures in society.
Well, you may have
that manifest.
There. Yeah, you may have something when you talk about the alignment of where we're off. There's definitely something off. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, let me ask you this here. With the school shootings now and the fact that these are gun-free zones, and we've had this conversation before about gun-free zones. I mean, it's an oxymoron that you might as well put a sign up and say, criminals welcome, please come in here. That might be the alternative sign we might put up for this. But anyways, talk to me about our schools themselves. We talk about hardening the schools. Do we make them into fortresses? Do we use walls, fences, scanners, more cameras, lock them down? How do we get the schools safe, Randy?
Well, there can be some target hardening that takes place. There's some very basic stuff that can be done to target harden. I just actually received some information today that's very, very disturbing about this latest shooting in Florida, and that is that this suspect actually walked into the school through an unlocked door, which is supposed to be kept locked, and he walked in with a rifle case. It was and walked right by a security guard who did nothing.
Wow.
So, you know, you talk about target hardening. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's got to be some common sense that enters into this equation. Mm-hmm. And what we saw in this Florida shooting is just an epic, epic fail of law enforcement mm-hmm. on every scale. I've never seen anything like
exactly.
this. And there needs
exactly.
to be. There needs to be some people that answer for this.
Well, Randy, Governor Rick Scott came out and he says he wants armed officers at all the schools in the state. Do you support that?
I do. I support arming teachers, quite honestly.
Right.
Joe Pangaro and I actually had a discussion on my show the other day that you know, both of us, the best solution mm-hmm. is to arm a cadre of teachers and staff members that can be on site all the time. It's the most cost effective, and I think it would be the most effective for the safety of the children.
Ava, so let's pick it up there. So look at all the parents and the families that were, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, 17 people were brutally murdered. I mean, it's unimaginable that this happens in this day and age. There's also a lot of reports coming through that we talked about at the top of the show here about very possibly Broward County officers that potentially did not go in there, along with that security officer who now is resigned and tried to get out of there with his pension before he was going to be, dismissed. So as a parent, as somebody who, you know, you think of all the parents, Ava, that have children in schools around the country. And I mean, I think a lot of people are going to begin to homeschool. That's probably going to be a wave of the future now. And number two, there's got to be people that are afraid to send their kids to school tomorrow morning.
Yes. One of the major problems I've seen over the years anyways, schools are now very large institutions.
Sure.
They're huge, and there are many students bused from far, far away mm-hmm. to these large institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing, we don't have neighborhood schools anymore. So that's part of the problem, is the sheer numbers of people mm-hmm. that we need to keep safe in this school environment. I would say, you know, from my own vantage point as a parent of a student in a school, I would definitely want armed officers there who are skilled shooters. This particular tragic event is an epic fail for law enforcement, and I have many law enforcement people who follow me. I have some law enforcement people in my family. And this breaks their heart when they see this, and I know the guys on here feel the same way. Randy, I'm a big fan of yours, by the way. The thing that bothers me the most about this whole event, mm-hmm. as tragic as it is, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the Rahm Emanuel quote, never let a serious crisis go to waste.
Mm-hmm. The shock and information, Lieutenant Joe, that has come forth here, the last day or so here with other officers potentially not going in there. Speak about that a moment. What have you heard about that? And what do you think about that?
My concerns here are that we don't have all the facts yet. We have the information that's coming out, leaking out. if it's true that people did not respond as they were supposed to, this is disturbing on many levels.
Right.
The individual officer, if he didn't go in for whatever reason, he was afraid to get hurt, or if he was assigned to take a position. Right. If he didn't go in because he was afraid to get hurt, that's difficult, I think, for anyone to deal with. I can imagine those parents having to hear that after hearing all the other things that went wrong here, and now hearing Randy say that he went through an unlocked door. It just compounds the entire painful thing. And once it all comes out, we will learn our lessons from it, and hopefully we can move forward.
Well, like Randy said a moment ago, Joe, I mean, you know, he's never seen a calamity of events happen like this. I think every one of us can attest to that. I mean, this is so blatant in your face.
No, this is a train wreck.
Oh, yeah, there's a train wreck. Yeah, this has got to be the one that changes the whole narrative in the conversation. It has to be.
On top of all of that, I have an 18-year-old daughter who's in high school, and I think because of the availability of social media, they actually watch these kids in the classroom being shot at, running for their lives, slipping on blood and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
They had a fire alarm in her high school the other day, and three of the kids were paralyzed, couldn't even get up from the desk because they were afraid, what if there's somebody doing that in the hallway?
Absolutely.
So this is a paradigm changer, I think.
Absolutely. So, yeah, there's no way I would have my kid leave, and I certainly wouldn't be leaving the school on any fire alarm. I don't care. If it burns, I'll jump out the window. But I ain't walking out that door, I can tell you that. I don't trust the system anymore, guys. How can you trust this? All right, let me ask you, Joe, then Randy and Dennis. Let's go right around here. I want to talk to you about changing the age to 21 versus 18. Is this a good idea or a bad idea to possess guns, to legally own guns? Joe, good idea or bad idea?
Well, we do that here where I am in New Jersey. You got to be 21 to get a handgun.
Okay.
I think an 18-year-old person, this is the argument. We can send an 18-year-old to fight in battle. They come home, they can't have a beer, and now they can't own a gun.
Right.
Owning a gun is a Second Amendment right. It's in our Constitution. I think we need to do a better job of screening who gets these weapons. And I think that is probably the middle ground we need to get to. But, of course, if you give an inch on what you believe, the other side will take advantage, and that's what we're all afraid of.
That's a great way to put it. You said New Jersey, you have to be 21 to purchase firearms. Is that correct?
To purchase a handgun. You can get rifles and shotguns at 18, but you can't get a handgun.
Isn't that something? So you can buy an AR-15, but not a handgun.
Correct.
Randy, did you know that?
Yeah. And
that's
New
incredible.
Jersey has very, very, very strict gun laws, and some to the point of ridiculousness. I've seen them prosecute people that have a CCW permit from Pennsylvania and just happen to be driving through, and they treat them like they're a real criminal.
Right.
So I've seen some ridiculous, you know, prosecutions take place. But I personally have no issue with raising the age to 21. You know, as Joe said, the problem is with, you got to put a party on it. Unfortunately, it's the Democratic Party. They are so anti-gun, they're venomous about it, that their end goal is to ban weapons. There's no doubt about it. So you give a little bit, and they just they'll go hog wild.
All right, we've got just moments left here, but I want to get a couple of specific things. Lieutenant Joe Panguero, you run school security and safety here. Take 60 seconds, please, real tight on time, but tell me, what's the vision of what you would like to see happen to secure our schools, please?
Well, I think there's two things we need to look at. There are the internal threats and the external threats. We're focused on the external threats, the person who comes from outside to attack our buildings. Most of us do a pretty good job with that, locking the doors, cameras. We have glazing on the windows to try and protect us. What we're not focusing enough on is the internal threat, which is really the big threat. Not everybody uses backpack searches or metal detectors, and this is where most of the danger comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Where one of our students will come in, or in our workplaces, one of our coworkers comes into the building, they're allowed in, and then they act out their violent scenario for whatever reason, mental health reasons, anger, bullying, whatever it is. And we're not prepared. We're not teaching people how to recognize the signs. And we look at Florida, and again, the most horrific example of how many signs were there for this young man, and the system really failed everyone. we can do a lot more.
Randy, last word here on the show. With all of this happening now across the country, what do you think at this moment in time happens now with the gun laws? What changes do you see happening here? Take just a quick moment, please, and tell me.
I think that there's going to be perhaps for the first time some really honest discourse about some possible let me put it this way. There are no solutions. There isn't going to be a solution to this, to gun violence in schools. It is going to continue. The best that we can do is to try and tip the odds in the favor of our kids. Mm-hmm. And we do that through target hardening. We do that through arming the cadres of teachers, mm-hmm, that are trained to take care of a threat. And we look at the mental health issue. You know, you got to remember, our mental health capacity here in this country is abysmal. I was working the streets when basically the mental institutions were emptied out, and we simply have not had an effective way, yeah, for law enforcement to play a role in any meaningful way in people that are clearly mentally ill.
Well, and that is core to this conversation, Randy, because this kid was obviously mentally disturbed, I mean, on every
clearly
level. And as you say, all the signs were there. What worries me the most, friends, is how many other people like there are there out there like this kid. Well, listen, big thank you. And I want to mention to folks that Lieutenant Randy Sutton's show, Blue Lives Radio, you can hear the full interview that Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, who again does the school security for a business, you can hear him in that exchange with Lieutenant Randy Sutton right back at America Out Loud. It's a great show, great production, and Randy does phenomenal with that show. It's well followed out there by everybody across the country, including big circles of law enforcement and others. Well, listen, I want to take just a moment here, and I want to say that in closing, I'd like to offer lesson number one of what I think about America is all great change in America, friends, begins at the dinner table. Families, responsibilities, and accountability. And it's a message that was certainly put out there time and time again by Reverend Billy Graham. And I want to end the program today and say, Reverend Billy Graham, as you know, has died at the age of 99. His message was very, very simple. Keep God in play. Keep him in this Christian Judeo nation front and center in all things. Bring prayer back to school. Well, Reverend Billy Graham will lie in honor at the U.S. Capitol, and House Speaker Paul Ryan has invited all members of Congress and the public to pay their respect to the man. And he's being called America's pastor. Many people refer to him as sort of like the Pope in many other types of religions. In any event, he's the first one to be lie in honor in the Capitol since Rosa Parks, if you can believe that, friends. Thank you again to the panel here for this discussion. And friends, thank you. Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.